For over 20 years, TAG conferences have been educating traders around the world. If you've never attended a TAG conference, you may be missing one of the easiest, most cost-effective ways to learn how to trade the right way.
Listening to these people talk about the ins and outs, the actual uses of the technical indicators that I like to use in my system, in my process, it'll be very valuable, very informative.
At TAG conferences, you learn from top experts how to execute all the latest trading techniques.
I found that the seminar has provided me with many additional tools to address these issues, more than what I can probably use at any one time, and I need to develop my own personal style with the information, and I look forward to practicing that in the coming year and being back here next year.
So if you want to improve your own trading and learn how to successfully trade stocks, futures, and options, plan on attending this year's TAG conference.
I am new at this environment. They've presented their material in a way that I could comprehend what level, you know, that they were at, and follow through and continue the session right up to the end of each session and understand exactly what they were saying.
No other organization has trained more traders around the world than TAG. When you attend a TAG conference, you get the best trading education possible, guaranteed, or your money back.
Really opened up my thinking.
Yes.
And how I approach the problem. And so, you know, there's a lot of work to do when I get home.
To make you a better trader.
Really changed how I'm thinking.
Well, I find that it's been absolutely wonderful. I've only been doing this for about 6 months. I paper traded a little bit, and then I opened an account, and I found that there was a big hole in my education, and TAG has filled a whole lot of it.
Call today for your free TAG conference brochure. Ensure your future success with TAG. 800-538-7424.
Now for our feature presentation, recorded live at TAG.
So, let me introduce myself. I'm Tom Busby. First of all, I want to thank each and every one of you for coming this morning, because it's been a long conference, as we were saying. I think it started Thursday, and this is the finishing last two sessions. A little background. I started trading approximately 20 years ago, and, you know, I like going into this because I think it's a testament to one thing, and the testament is it's not an easy thing to do to be a trader. It's taken me a lot of years, and every day I had to get up and you know, take the religion again, because you're subject to falling into traps and things that will keep you from being a successful trader. And so one of the processes and things that I do is I always constantly review my current trades and how I'm trading, how I'm perceiving everything. But I originally started with Merrill Lynch. At the time I started with them, I was so naive, I didn't know there was any other firm but Merrill Lynch. And I went to New York, went through the training program. And as I was telling one of the guys this morning, I had a real philosophy problem in that it seemed like everything had to be bought and then sold. And in early 1981, the Wall Street Journal had an article talking about the S&P. And the S&P seemed to me as a perfect vehicle to take advantage of what I would call downturns in the market. And I've always viewed the market that you can make money either way, long or short. And quite honestly, after reviewing 20 years of trading, I have to say that if you said, what's my bias? I'd rather be short than long. Well, that's a problem when you're in the longest bull market in history. You know, you're looking at a market that goes up, makes highs, goes up, makes highs, goes up, makes highs. So what happens is, either you got to come to the realization, the market doesn't care what Tom Busby thinks, and therefore you have to develop a structure and a method that is really sort of neutral bias that allows you to do what the market tells you to do, as opposed to what maybe you want it to do. So about 5 years ago, I created what I call the roadmap to the market. And, you know, if you're a doctor, you understand about what I'm saying. Or if you're not a doctor and have a physical, you understand what I'm saying. But basically what I do is I pretty much check the vital signs of the market, and these vital signs are my indicators, and I do this on a periodic basis. What I found is that by doing this, it's a reality check. And what I mean by that is if I'm wrong and I check and my indicators are negative, then that causes me to have reflection upon the current position. That sounds pretty simple on the surface, but let's talk about the mental game. Mentally, if you cross that line into the trade, you're always a personal cheerleader for that trade to happen, and sometimes you get biased towards that viewpoint. By having the roadmap and having the ability to keep cross-checking yourself, it's sort of, you know, you're able to, I guess, bring to reality the focus on what the market's doing instead of what maybe Tom Busby thinks the market's doing. Or, in your case, what you think the market's doing. But anyway, I chose the S&P 500. I consider it the ultimate day trading vehicle. What I mean by that is you can place as large orders as you want to place. The liquidity is great. You don't have to wait for an uptick or downtick to sell it. You can enter the market, exit the market. And a side benefit, depending on your schedule, you have the ability from Sunday night, starting at 5:30 Central Time, to through next Friday, the following week, to trade it 24 hours a day. And you say, well, how can you do that? I got sleep. Well, there's a lot of ways to do that, and the market offers you a lot of opportunity, but depending on your schedule, what you do is you learn the market, you learn the language of the market, and you try to take advantage of when you've got time to focus. And we'll talk about that a little bit of that as we get further into it. But anyway, you got to have a process. Now this weekend, I am sure that you've heard a lot of good things from a lot of different speakers. And the one thing I'd like to caution you, when you leave here, don't take one of those elements and think you're going to go back and make a great trade. Use that, what you learn, in your total viewpoint of what you think the market's going to do and how you're going to react to the market, and watch it before you actually put capital at risk. A mistake I made early on was I was always searching for the Holy Grail. And I'm going to tell you, after 20 plus years in this industry, there's no Holy Grail out there. There's no system that you can go by that's going to continually make your money. There's no method that you're going to use that you're not going to have to tweak here and there with the market to continue to make money in the market. What you got to do is be open-minded and try to learn something new every day. I only have two goals as a trader. Very simple goals. I want to end up every day with a little bit more money than I started with. And the second goal is I want to learn something new about the market. I have a gentleman that works with me. He's been trading the market for 44 years. And when I say his market, that's the cattle and grain market. And watching and observing him over the past 12 years, he's got one thing that's very consistent. He's got a structure, he's got a method, and he applies it every day. And you say to yourself, he's lasted 44 years, so he must have something that I would want to copy or emulate, and I think I have, and that is the ability to be unbiased, look at the market for what it is, and then make your decision whether you're going to risk capital. The decision process. You know, it's one thing to have a great method and to be a great analyst. How many people in here play golf? Okay, and do we have any scratch golfers in here? Okay. Well, I'm a scratch golfer. But I'm only a scratch golfer on the driving range. Okay, I can go out there and I can hit a golf shot, and it's a great shot. Once reality sets in, I get on the number one hole, I find out I'm not a scratch golfer. I find out, I played about an 18. The difference is, on the driving range, it's for practice. When it counts for real on the course, I find out those great shots on the driving range wasn't what I thought they were. Trading's very similar, okay? You can say, I bought Microsoft at 85 and 90 mentally, But when you're actually in that trade, there's a lot of psychological things that enter into that. And we'll talk about that as the decision process. Once we cross that line, and that line being from analyst to trader, a change takes place. There's a lot of things that you have to do before you cross that line. And I found this was, I think at the school in Mobile, we were over 400 people that I have now mentored or taught to trade. And the thing that I find is a lot of them are great analysts. But once they cross that line and become a trader, they can't execute, they can't pull the trigger due to fear, greed. A lot of things get in the way of that analysis, which is sometimes a lot better than my own. So what you've got to do is make all the decisions that are going to affect that trade before you actually enter the trade. And we'll talk about that as we get into the talk. The trading approach. I've got the trading approach defined as into three areas. One is the roadmap that I use. The second thing that I use as a trading approach is key numbers. And there's one common ingredient in the market. The common ingredient in the market, I want you to think about this. What is it? It's time. There's a 9 o'clock on Monday, there's a 9 o'clock on Tuesday, there's 9 o'clock on Wednesday. People get up, and generally they're habits, creatures of habit. They'll get up at the same time every day. And I find there's patterns that are related to time in the market. We're going to talk about some of those patterns. And I'm going to show you what I've observed and what are pretty reliable tendencies for the market to do. And then we'll get into proprietary techniques. Now, proprietary techniques goes on and on and on and on. And unfortunately today we got 2 hours and I can't tell you all the proprietary techniques that I use, but I can tell you some of the general ones and maybe they will help you in your trade. Alright, first of all, how many people in here have traded the S&P? So I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, that's good, half the class. For those of you that don't trade the S&P, the S&P is a futures contract traded on Chicago Mercantile. It's currently trading, the last time I checked, about 1,418. That's an index price. And all that means is that if you buy it at 1,418 and sell it at 1,419, the dollar value is $250. So it's 250 a point. It trades in 0.10 cent ticks. So 0.10 cent tick is equal to $25. Goes 14, 18, 14, 18, 10, 14, 18, 20, 14, 19. It starts trading every day at 8:30 Central Time, and quits trading every day at 3:15. Now let's talk about a day trade. A day trade on the S&P actually starts the night before, and that's on the Globex session. The Globex session starts on Sunday night at 5:30, and last night the S&P opened at 1428. Or 2790. Started at 5:30. It traded all the way through the night. At 8:15 this morning, it stopped trading, and that was called Globex Session 1. Trades made on the Globex Session that were not closed out, that were carried into the day session, that are closed out for the night at 3:15, or the day at 3:15, are considered a day trade. Okay? So that's where the day changes over every afternoon. And the night at 3:45, the new Globex session will start trading, and it will trade through the night. So what does that do for you, and what do you know now that for those that don't trade it? It tells you that you have a way, after the general market closes, to take into account events that might happen in the evening and participate in the night market. Night market is a fascinating market. The liquidity of the night market has grown every year. And I find I have no problem executing large orders in the night market. It's like a holiday market, and that you should use limit orders when you enter it. But you can put stops under Globex 2, and that was one of the big, I thought, fallacies in Globex 1. You couldn't put stops in it. So I'm very comfortable with the night market. The S&P also has another contract. They call it the E-mini. I don't know if you've heard about the E-mini, but the E-mini trades like the big contract. The analysis is used for one is the same analysis is used for the second. The only difference is the elasticity, and I mean elasticity, if you could get comfortable to use a 2 or 3 point stop on the big contract, you need to add 1 or 2 points on the electronic market. Because what happens, and this is what I found because I'm a Globex permit holder, is that when the public that is putting those orders in, it seems to extend beyond the price of the pit. Where the pit, you got the auction market going on, you got the computer age shooting it to higher highs and lower lows. So you need to be aware of that with the E-mini. So sometimes if you're watching the big contract and the little contract might have stopped you out if it was close, so always double check that. We've had a couple instances of that happening. Okay. Now, I refer to what I do as a method, not a system. Here's how I distinguish between what a method and a system is. A method is the ability to use your brain, make modifications, but you have a structure. A system is a system of buy when it crosses the 200-day moving average, sell when it crosses the 30-day moving average down. In other words, it's a pre-programmed set of parameters that enter and exit a trade. After 20 years of trading, I will tell you, I've seen a lot of systems come and go. My advice to you is never put it on autopilot and always use a method for your evaluation. I think it's a safer approach. I think once you get control of yourself, the individual, it's the best approach. Action-oriented. Okay. Those that trade the S&P know one of the problems with the S&P is overtrading. I tell our students that if you trade more than three times a day, I think that you're probably on the verge of overtrading. If you trade six times or more a day, I know you're overtrading. Therefore, you need to look at the number of times you want to expose yourself to risk during the course of a trading day. And I'll tell you about, relating to me a little bit, when I, in maybe the first 12 to 14, 15 years, I would spend 98% of my time trading and 2% of my time thinking. The difference, and if there's been any major difference that I can see in my own trading, is now I spend 98% of my time thinking and only 2% of my time trading. There's a big crossover there. So I notice now I don't have to be on every ship that leaves the port. I only want to be on the ones that's going to get me to my destination. And that's a strategy, and that's a thought process that I entered the market with. Understandable. Okay. I don't know if you saw the quote that was up here at the very beginning. Do I have any economists in here? Okay, good. I always like using this one. You don't have to be an economist to trade the market. What you need to have is some kind of method, checklist format method that you go through that gives you a result. Then you've got a way to evaluate how you did that trade and what you need to change about that method. That's very important. So what I'm saying is, just because it didn't work the first time, the second time, or the third time, doesn't mean you got a bad method. It means you might have to tweak it a little bit to get the result that you desire. Don't throw it out just because the results were not what you had planned for. It has to be, understandable. You don't have time to do a doctoral thesis. I hear CNBC all the time talking about fair value. And fair value might be important if I'm going to be in this trade for, a few days, a few weeks. But fair value to me is not important consideration as a day trader. Because what I'm looking at as a day trader is to capture the moment when I got the least amount of risk for the greatest amount of reward. And I'll talk to you about fair value if you got any questions about it after the talk. But that's my viewpoint. It's important in the longer term sense. Okay. How many people in here use charts? Okay. How many people in here use fundamentals? And how many people integrate the two? Okay. Well, I've found that, and this is my opinion. My opinion is charts are great. Fundamentals are great. But what you want to do is have an ability to analyze the market without charts, without fundamentals. And that's what I've done with the roadmap, and I'll show you that as we get into the details. But if you are able, and to me numbers don't lie, but if you're able to look at numbers and come up with conclusions based on those numbers, then you got something as opposed to an interpretation. You got a fact to deal your trade off of, and I think that's more important. So I can have one guy look at a chart and tell me it looks bullish, and I have another guy look at the same chart and tell me it looks bearish, And I look at the chart totally separate. I look at the numbers, and they tell me the answer to that question. Risk management. Okay, the S&P, just for your general information, will have a daily range most days of somewhere around 20 to 24 points. Okay, what does that mean? Do you need to risk 24 points on a trade to be right or wrong? I say no. What you need to do is come up with a method that talks about how much money you have allocated to the S&P and to trade the S&P, and then you need to come up with a method that tells you, I want to take this percent and lose on this one trade. You don't want to risk your whole wad on one trade. One trade doesn't make you a trader. What makes you a trader is the consistency to apply the principles that you have determined to be important to make your analysis interpretation, and then jumping over to your execution. So before you trade, you write out a plan. And that plan takes into account how much money do I have to put towards this project. And you got to be very disciplined about this. We're not wanting you to go in your pocket every 30 days. How many people know how many people last after 30 days of trading the futures account? You know what the industry average is? Anybody know? No. 20%? No. About 10% last after 30 days with a futures account. Why? Let's ask why. Because you told him cattle was strong, was going up. He went and bought cattle, didn't put a stop in, and next thing he knows, he's lost all his margin he put up to buy the cattle. And he says, I don't understand why I lost. Didn't have a plan, didn't have a procedure, didn't have something to take care of. So the first thing that I want you to write down is that you never make a trade unless you have a stop. I don't care what kind of stop you use, but have a stop in a trade. Because that stop will separate you from the reality of a losing trade and will keep a small loss from growing into a big loss. It's okay to get back in after you had your analysis and said, hey, I need to be back in this trade, but you got to use a stop to survive. I'm going to give you a story about a stop. 1986, I think I'm on 20 S&P contracts. I'm at the top of First Oklahoma Tower in Oklahoma City. Everything's going good. I think I'm up about $8,000 on this trade. I don't have a stop. All of a sudden, the lights go off, the computer goes down, the phones go down. I'm in sheer darkness, and I got 20 S&Ps on. What did I do? I run down 13 flights of stairs. I get to the basement of the building. I jump in my car. I crank it up. I drive outside the building. I place an order to the exchange. Put my stop in. And I said to myself, what can I learn from that lesson after I'm half dead from running down 13 flights of stairs in sheer panic? And what I learned was, I didn't plan for the lights to go off. I didn't plan for the phone system to go down. I didn't plan for all those events to happen. I'm telling you right now, have a stop in at some place, any time that you get off the phone or off the computer with that trade. Because it will happen. It's happened since that time, and it'll happen again. Therefore, when everybody else is dying of a heart attack running down those flights of stairs, if you're in a tall building, you'll be sitting there thinking, at least I got a stop in. It's a comfortable feeling. I had one in my car down in the bottom of the deal back then. Back then, I don't think we had it. You remember? You got to go back to that time frame. Oh, a cell phone was, I got to tell you, a cell phone was, as far as I was concerned, was the greatest invention that ever happened. And that reminds me of the time that I had to go to the bathroom. Okay? I lost $8,000 because I had to go to the bathroom. You know, you're trading pretty heavy, and it doesn't take much to lose that. But the point being is, the cell phone was great. It freed me from having to be right there in front of the computer all the time, or thinking I had to be right there in front of the computer all the time. All right, the roadmap to the market, okay, it's based on some simple principles. It's based on time. It's based on key numbers. And it's based on indicators that I've tested over the years that I think are important to give me the short-term direction of the market. What we do, and if you ever read Barron's, we do it on a half-hour clock. For day trading, I use a 30-minute chart for day trading. The reason I use a 30-minute chart, I used to use a tick chart, I used to use a 1-minute chart, I used to use a 5-minute chart. I've gotten older and smarter. Okay? If you're 25 or 30 years old and you think a 1 to 5 minute, go through the process, but you're going to end up where I did. The 30-minute chart is the best chart to use for my goal of making those 2 or 3 good trades a day. All right. I talk about analysis and I talk about the interpretation. And I love asking this question. If you're long the market, like if you were long the S&P market today and say you bought on the opening at 1324 or 1424, and you look up there at 9 o'clock and it's at 1423, you say, I'm down a little bit. You look up there at 9:30, it's at 1421. Oh, I'm down a little bit more. You look up there at 1417, ooh, I'm getting down a lot. The reality of checking these numbers every half hour will bring you to your senses from the standpoint. I've taken where I planned to be a 1 or 2 point or 3 point loss, and now I've made it an 8 point loss, which is totally against my plan, totally against what I did, and I keep lying to myself the trade's going to come back. And how many people have done that? Okay, we all have. We bought it, and as soon as we get on that side of the line as trader, we turn around and start lying to ourselves about how good a trade this was. We just lost a little bit on our time, and this is obviously coming back. The funny thing about it is they never come back. They get worse and worse and worse, and then they get to the point you can't stand it any longer, and you go in and liquidate it, and you actually hit the low of the day. And you ask yourself, how did this happen? Well, it happened because you didn't have a stop when you went in. You didn't make these decisions when you went in to let you know this is the point of where I'm wrong in this trade. Now, on the roadmap, I've got it color-coded. Why do I have it color-coded? Because I want to be able to glance at these indicators and find out whether or not they're moving up or down and come to a consensus of direction and whether or not these trades may or may not be in the direction that I want to make these trades. And that's why I color-coded. Next one. Okay. I use certain indicators. And let me just give you a few of them. The Morgan Stanley, MSH. The composite, COMPX. The tick indicator, TICK. And different quote systems have different ones. And I also use the advanced decline line, and I use the bond market. And those make up the core. Every now and then I add to those when I need certain things to give me a deciding vote. For example, right now I'm using the NASDAQ futures, symbols ND9Z. I find the NASDAQ futures is not a good vehicle to trade, but it's a very good indicator for me to let me know whether the trend's going to continue, stop, or turn. And I started using it about 3 weeks ago, and I'm really pleased with the results of watching this trade in its correlation with the S&P.
What is
the? The correlation is 100%. In other words, for example, if I see the NASDAQ, I'm sorry, he's asked me what the correlation is between the NASDAQ futures and the S&P futures, and let me explain, and the question is, what is the correlation? The answer to that is, what I'm looking at, if I've got all my indicators green and I'm long, then I want to see the NASDAQ futures also being making new highs and confirming the rest of the indicators. And that's the correlation I'm looking for with the NASDAQ futures. If I look and see that the NASDAQ futures is diverging, and then I will alter my approach to that long position. And by alter means I will type my stop or I will use techniques to get out of the market, okay? And I'll discuss those in a little bit. Okay? These directional indicators help me decide the most important question every trader in here has got to know, which is, should I be long or should I be short? There's an equally important question that you got to decide, or should I be out? And we'll discuss that in a little bit, too. But I don't care how big a stop you use, if you got the direction of the market wrong, it's not big enough. So you got to get the direction
Please
right.
Please stop the session.
To the question of whether to be long or whether to be short. I gotta know that up front. I mean, if you tell me to be long IBM, I got to know if it's really in an upward movement before I want to risk my capital. So I have to have what I call the vital signs have to support that theory. Once they support that theory, then the next thing that I got to determine is what is my risk, okay? That's the most important thing. Am I wanting to risk $5 to make a dollar? I say not. What I'm really wanting to do is risk $1 to make two. And why is that? Because what looks good on paper doesn't turn that way, you know, doesn't happen that way in reality. So you got to take into account slippage, you got to take into account the phone wasn't answered, the computer went down, all these other factors enter into the actual execution phase. You have to take that into account. And so when you do your trade setup, you want to make sure that your risk is reasonable, will allow you to stay in the trade, it's not too tight, in other words, the noise of the market is not going to stop you out. And so you're looking at it to say, if I put my stop at this level, has the trend really turned? If it hits that point, that's the answer you want to say, yes, it has turned if it hits that point. Then you go to the point, I can make this trade. All right, key numbers. We said we had a lot of people use charts, and we had a lot of people maybe use moving averages and all these things. Well, key numbers are very important. What are key numbers? Key numbers are resistance points and support points. You have to have key numbers when you go into trading. And the source you get those key numbers is very important. You've got to be able to bracket the market. For example, right now, if you told me the S&P is at 1417, which is where it was when we started this session, and the next question is, so, Tom, where's support? Support's 1416. How do I know that? I've got that number from my roadmap. And I'll get into that in detail a little bit later. You say to me, Tom, I just checked the S&P. It's at 1414. And I would come back and tell you this key number, the support is 1411. How do I know that? Because I've got a process that generates key numbers for me, and these key numbers are very important to my trading. If you said that S&P is at 1428, and I would tell you that I would have to see it above 1431 for it to mean anything. And I would say that 1425 was support. So I'm always bracketing the current price of the S&P with a support and resistance. And I don't do that by looking at a chart. I don't do that by looking at fundamentals. I do that because the market has told me that something significant about 1316, 1311, 1325, and 1332. That's very important. So I've got to have key numbers before I make a trade. And that helps me determine what else. That helps me determine how much I need to risk on this trade, because my stop needs to be below that support level that I determine is support of the market. It also helps me determine what my reward might be. Okay. The last thing that makes up my whole process is time zones. I want you to write this one down. If you trade the first hour that the market's open, and you haven't been trading for at least 5 years, that's a recipe for disaster. Let me explain why. The first hour the market is open, you're having what I call the votes come in of beliefs. I believe the market's going up. I believe the market's going down. I decided to buy Walmart yesterday. Hey, buy Walmart on the open. All these jiggles and jaggles are happening that first hour. You do not want to trade as a day trader that first hour, because you're going to have an uptrend, you're going to have a downtrend. And early in my career, and I'm happy to say I stopped this after 15 years, I'm a slow learner, early in my career, I could be at 9:15 in the morning and have lost more points than the average range that we had. We had a 5-point range, I had a 10-point loss. Why? I'm buying on the up move, I'm selling on the down move at the wrong times. So let's eliminate that from your trading style. And the reason we're going to do that is because we want to put the odds in your favor. You know, out here in Las Vegas, you've got a lot of gamblers. But you also have a lot of speculators out here. Speculators being the people that tend to make money over and over again. They got loss prevented systems. They've got different trends they look at in their own personal self-discipline. Applies to trading, too. When you trade, and it's very important, you want to be a speculator. You don't want to be a gambler. Now, the difference being is speculators trade and put their money at risk when the odds are in their favor. Gamblers put money at risk when what? When they're getting the actions of the trade. We don't want to do that. So let's make no bones about it. Are we doing this for fun, or are we doing it to get paid? Had a guy I talked to, I love telling this story. He's telling me, he said, "Tom, I'd like to come to your school down in Mobile." He said, "But I just can't seem to pay that tuition." I asked him, I said, "Well, let me ask you a question. You're a very successful businessman." I said, "Let's just look at your last 2 weeks. How many hours did you spend studying the market?" Oh, he said, I put about 100 hours in the last 2 weeks studying the market. I said, "Well, let me ask you another question." I said, "Well, how much money did you make in the last 2 weeks?" And he said, "Well, I really didn't make any money. I lost $4,000 or $5,000. And I said, "Well, let me ask you another question." I said, "You lost $4,000. You worked 100 hours. I said, "Is this the way you used to run your business?" He paused on the other end of the phone. He said, "I never thought of it that way." Okay? Point being, you want to get paid for your time. Most valuable asset any of us in here have. Why is time the most valuable asset? We've got a limited amount of it on this earth. And we're like a candle. We're burning it down. You're giving me your time this morning. It's very much appreciated. I'm giving you my time. It is very, it's the only asset we can't go back at the end of the game and say we want more. Okay? I got time zones that I trade in. If you never trade the S&P and you're only going to trade stocks, I want you to watch these time zones because they're very important. Time zone number one is from 9:30 to 10:15. Time zone number two is from 12:30 to 1:15. Time zone number three is from 2:15 to 2:45. These time zones will offer you the best opportunity to catch a trend, catch a reversal, or to make a trade that the odds are in your favor. Yes. He asked me, would I repeat my favorite time zones to trade? No. Central time zone, I'm sorry. And what time zone it was. So the question was, what are my favorite time zones to trade, and what time zone am I talking about, which is Central Time. And by the way, if you know me, I'm always on Central Time. After I left the Air Force, I made that a policy to always stay on Central Time. And so if I say 8:30, I'm talking 8:30 Central Time. All right, time zone number one, repeat, 9:30 to 10:15. Time zone number two, 12:30 to 1:15. Time zone number three, 2:15 to 2:45. Okay? No, what happens, you got good liquidity to execute your orders. The trend of the market asserts itself during these times, and that's the time you either get an acceleration of the current trend or a reversal of the previous trend. Okay? Okay, across the top you see, this is an old road map here, but you'll see across the top some of the indicators I talked about, and down the left-hand side you see the times of the day, and it starts out at 8:39 on down. And you can see, and I want to point out something specific here, at 12:30 to 1 o'clock you have what I call the noon balloon. From 12:30 to 1. Market has a tendency from 12:30 to 1 to go up. And if you'll follow this, this tendency is very important to know because you don't want to be going short. And one of my personal rules is I don't go short at 12:30 to 1 because I've done it enough time to know not to do it through the school of hard knocks. So I want you to watch it when you leave here about where the market was at 12:30, where it is at 1. Now, there's a lot of things that you can learn from what happens at noon, and I call it the noon barometer. If the noon barometer is negative, then in the last 60 days, when the noon balloon was negative, the market fell the last half of the day. And what I mean, the market fell the last half of the day. Approximately 68% of the time in the last 60 days, if we were negative between 12:30 and 1, the market declined by a minimum of 6 points from where it was at 12:30 in the day. So if you get one of my educational updates, and all of you in here will get that, I think we've decided for 10 days after the... You get one of these educational updates, and I say under today, watch the noon balloon, and if it's negative, then play the market accordingly. What I mean by that is you should be going short during time zone number 3, because that's what the percentages say to do, as long as the roadmap's in support of that particular move. It's a good trade. It might last for another, 5 days. It might be over, but I want to tell you about it. This is what the roadmap allows me to do. It's constantly reevaluate and analyze the current moves and the current trades in the market. Now, let me tell you about another trade. If you'd been here Saturday at my session, somebody said, well, what do you think about this Microsoft news? I said, it's very simple what I think about the Microsoft news. It's very good news. You know, they got a mediator appointed in Chicago. That's very good news for the market. And would most of you in here agree, generally speaking, that that's good news? Raise your hand if you agree. Okay? Majority of people in here agree that that's, generally speaking, good news. Therefore, how can I use that aftermarket news to take advantage of? Okay? Very simple. The market, the S&P market, closed at 13.2840 on Friday. Huh? 14. I'm sorry. Always 100 points off. I'm telling you the next 100 points subconsciously. But anyway, the market closed at 14.28. Okay? And I said to him, I said, it's very simple. This gives me my first trade on Sunday night if two events occur. And they said, what is that? I said, I'm going to look where Globex opens on Sunday night. If Globex opens around where we closed on the S&P, I'm going to watch it throughout the evening. At 3:30 in the morning, if it's not above 14:31, then I know that the market is telling me we're not going up, we're going down. Therefore, if the market's going down, how do I make money? I go short. Got a very low risk point. So last night at dinner, while y'all were having dinner, I'm tracking the S&P market. Ken's sitting in here at the table, and he's laughing because he knows what I'm doing. The S&P was at 2740 or 2780 at that time, and I said, sell me a couple contracts, short, put a stop in. And I told him, I said, I'm going to go on and take a short position here, and I'm going to add to it in the morning when I wake up if we haven't made new highs. I woke up this morning. I got a natural clock. I always wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, 3:30 Central Time. And that natural clock has been a lot more reliable once I got past 45. Okay? So I get up, I check the S&P market, it's trading at 14:27. And I know London's up, Hong Kong's up, Tokyo's up, but the S&P market is not up. I know I've got my answer. So I add to the position. I go take a shower. And I get out of the shower. The S&P market is now at 14:23. What did I do? Well, I had some contracts on. I covered the majority of those contracts because I'm a business guy, and I'm thinking, hey, I've been here for 3 days. It's cost me this amount of money. If I cover this trade here, this is a good point to take some of them down. I've had a nice fun time in Las Vegas. That's the way I think. Can't help it. That's just the way I think. I covered four of the contracts. I left one contract working, as I told you this morning, and I've got to stop in from where I ended the price. So it's going to be a lot of fun when I leave here to find out if it even got worse or if I got stopped out. But the point is, I'm using a trailing stop based on that 14:28 number that was identified by the opening last night, was confirmed by my 3:30 number. The opening price this morning was 14:25. You connect the dots. There's no direction you come up with but down. No other way a trader can come up with that this market was going down. I walked over to the machine this morning. And is anybody here on Microsoft? Okay, I walked over to the machine, and this is the way we view it. You look at it, and you say, hey, it's up $3. Not bad. I look at it, and I say, it's down $2. The reason is it was at $90 a share, and when I looked at it, it was $87. So I'm sitting there thinking totally opposite from a guy that holds it for long term. It's up $3. It is up $3. Can't argue that. But from my standpoint, it's down. So this, but because I judge everything by who's winning and who's losing, and I do that, and I'll get into that in a little bit of detail in the next session or the next half hour. I take the opening price, no matter what time frame we're looking at, and I'll just give you a broad-based view. The question was, why not say it's up or down? I'm a day trader. It doesn't matter that he bought Microsoft at 64. It matters where I bought it or where I sold it at. And I look at the opening price to determine as if I would have bought it or sold it this morning, whether I'm making money or losing money. All right, let's take the whole year. Does anybody in here know where the S&P opened this year? Okay, opened at 1245. This is November the 22nd. People that bought the S&P on January the 2nd, if they're still in that S&P, have had a great return. 1245 is their point of entry. Okay? People that bought the S&P on Friday at 1430 and now are looking at 1417 have a whole different view. That's why I use the opening bar as my decision point to determine whether who's winning and who's losing. Because I'm going to tell you this about the market. It rewards the winners and it punishes the losers. Have you ever seen the end of the day after the market's been real strong for the majority of the day and all of a sudden you get to the last 10 to 20 minutes of the market and it looks like they just, everybody said, let's roast the bears. And here comes this big market up in there with all the institutions and all the orders coming in to buy it. And what was a 20-point loss turns into a 30-point loss. As you view in the market, ask yourself, who's winning and who's losing? You determine the answer to that question, you determine the direction of the market. Who's winning and who's losing? And that's how I judge it. And I hope that answered your question. Okay. All right, let's talk about how I got prepared for this morning. And by the way, I have to tell you this. Even though the exchange views what I described as a day trade from last night until 3:15, mentally, I have to separate the sessions. I have the night session and the day session. So at 8:15 in the morning, I go through a process. That process consists of four parts. The first part is I find out where the market was trading at 3:30 in the morning. This morning it was trading at 1428. That's important to me. Why is that important to me? That's important to me because I know that Europe, Japan, and the rest of the world have put a value on our market, and that tells me what they think it's worth. And I use that as sort of a pivot number to look at how it trades in the U.S. That's why it's important. We're in a world economy. What happens in the evening affects our market, and we've got to be aware of that. The next thing I do is I check news. News. What kind of news is important to me? Government reports. A lot of the data feed services providing, DTN's got a very good page that says these are economic reports for the week. Barron's publication talks about the news of the week and news that I think is important. And the news that I try to limit my exposure is when the government's going to put out a report. I can tell you this. After listening to some of the best analysts in the world, some of the best economic majors in the world, and the best market gurus in the world, no one's ever been better than 50-50 guessing what direction that market's going to take after one of those reports. Some of them say they have. I tell you, in practice, I doubt it because I'm telling you it gets violent, and I don't want that kind of risk. The third thing that I do, and I'll review the first two, I check the 330 number, I check news. The third thing I do is I dial 1-883-VOLUME. What you're going to find on the other end of that phone is a list of what I call the speculators. And it's options. It's option players. And I'm checking volume on the S&P 500 options, calls and puts. I got a ratio I'll throw out to you. And this is the way I use it. If it's at 100%, meaning one call equals one put, that's a bearish signal to me. If it's at 25%, meaning there's 4 puts for one call, that's a bullish signal. And that's something that I'm trying to get a gauge of market sentiment with to find out what the rest of the world's thinking and how they place their bets on the market. And I can dial 1-883 volume and find that out throughout the day. They update it every 30 minutes. Yeah, 1-to-1. Yes, if you will call this number for the next 10 days, you will find out that when it is 1-to-1, the market goes down. And that explained it to you. Okay? So, in answer to your question, he could understand the 4-to-1 where everybody is saying the market is going down and the contrary indicator goes up. With this particular indicator that I use, I've found that when it's 1-to-1, the market goes down, and that's why I use it. Okay? And I want to point out some cautions there. One, during option closeout week, the third Friday of every month, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and the following Monday, the data is not to be used. It's not good to use during that time. Okay? That's very important. Okay. Then I come up with my list of key numbers. You heard that I said I don't ever enter a trade unless I know where support and resistance are. And that's my list of key numbers that is prepared before the market opens. I'm going to give you the key numbers for today. And if you were receiving our education update, you'd have these. But basically, starts out at 1431 on the S&P, 1428, 1425, 1422, 1418, 1416, 1411, 1405, 1402. Underline 1402. If we close below 1402, then you're going to see a whole new set of key numbers that come into play. So right now for me, if the market closed below 1402, that would show an acceleration to the current downtrend and take us lower. If we close above 1431, then that tells me that the uptrend that we've been in since 1241 is going to continue and accelerate. So on the outer ends, those are the two numbers that are important to me right now. Okay, so if you don't have certain rules that you follow, I would encourage you, starting today, build a personal rules checklist. Tom Bugby, as a trader, has learned a lot about myself. I don't know about you. You know more about yourself than I do, and therefore I would encourage you to write out some rules that you think that you've got to follow and modify. I'll give you a couple core rules, but what I'm basically saying is you know yourself the best. Some of us are more greedy than others. Some of us are more fearful than others. You need to know that about yourself before you enter the world of trading. And you'll find out, if you don't know it, after you enter the world of trading, you'll really find out the truth about yourself. Yes, and what we'll do, and quite honestly, what we'll do is with your email address or fax, we'll get this to you, okay? I just wanted to include it because I thought it was real important after hearing some of the questions, and so that's the main reason. So in answer to that question, are copies of additional detail about this method available? Yes. Right. Right. Okay, so let me tell you what Tom Busby does from 8:20 to 8:30. Took me four minutes to get up to speed on ready to go. My key numbers, the news, 3:30 number, options. What did I do that next 10 minutes? This is very important. I relax. I get everything off my mind that's bugging me or things that are going to interfere with my focus once 8:30 starts. I get that out of the way. And I won't start trading until I do. And hopefully it only takes me 4 or 5 minutes to do that. Because I've been there early and I'm an early riser and I've accomplished all those objectives. But the point I'm trying to make is, do not trade if you can't focus. Do not trade if you can't focus. And what's going to keep you from focusing might not bug me. So you got to decide what it takes for you to focus on something And you've got to eliminate all that when it's time to trade. Alright, as the S&P and the indicators go throughout the course of the day, you know, you record these numbers, and the reason you're doing that, there are reality checks to figure out whether or not you have determined the correct answer to the question. You got to determine to be right to make money, which is what direction this sucker's going, and am I in that direction, and is my stop going to protect me to keep me in that trade? Okay. Okay, I talk about the market has language. You know, a lot of people say, oh, the market confuses me. I don't understand why it's going up or why it's going down. And I'm going to tell you, after 20 years, I might not understand it either, but I do know how to trade it. And that's more important than understanding it. So what we got to do is put out the belief that there's somebody out there is going to explain to you why AOL went from 90 to 160. The facts are, AOL did go from 90 to 160. And there's ways for you to pick up evidence that will bring you to the conclusion you should be buying AOL. And we'll show you some of those. But let's talk about planning your trade. Okay? Let's talk about the whole thing. One, you got to have a futures account to trade the S&P. And there's many that would love to have you as customers and help you fill out the account forms and all that. The key question you need to ask is, what are they going to charge you for commission? If you pay more than $25 round turn for commission on trading the S&P, you're paying too much, and you can do equally well with someone else. So that ought to be the starting point that you say is your cost of that trade. And I will say that after years and years of trading, you'll find this becomes a big factor in how much you made and how much you didn't make is the actual cost of doing that business. So I'm going to throw that out there to you. There's plenty of people that will let you trade for less than $25, but that would be the upper limit, depending on what the hell. Well, $25. As low as you can get it. Okay? It depends on the size of the account, the volume of the account, the amount of business, and all the trades that you're going to do. Very important. Sometimes I pay, you know, like Damon just walked in back here. He handles my institutional orders. And I end up having to pay him $4 more for him to execute trades than I pay most people. But the reason is I get something in return. The quality of execution is better, and so I will use him for large orders. And there's a reason for that, because he's good at doing that. His desk, I think, y'all handle about 10% of the volume. Yeah, a day. In 20-something years of trading, I've never found anybody that can handle the old-fashioned way. You know, you pick up a phone and dial, and as good as they are, they're really good.
Please stop the session.
Really concerned about the
amount. Please resume the session.
Okay, we talked about, the question was, what's a good amount of commission to pay? And I said, as cheap as you can get, it's the best amount. But then you got to look at the value. You got to value whether you're getting good executions or not. And what's a good execution or not depends on your experience level, the way you enter the order. You know, you got several online brokers to enter your orders with. By the way, I use all different types. I do not limit myself, whether it's old-fashioned or new-fashioned. It's the way I trade. It depends on the trade that determines how I'm going to enter a trade. And I wouldn't limit yourself. In other words, I would always have the backup of doing it both ways. All right, planning your trade. We get a futures account. And we set a certain amount of money in there. And I ask you to really set an amount of money in there that's not large, but small, that gives you what you say a comfort level to trade the S&P. To trade the S&P, most vendors or most FCMs or future clearing merchants will ask you to post a $10,000 margin in the account to trade the big S&P. The people I clear through a firm, you send it out here, PFG, the people that come through our school, we ask them to post $5,000 and trade the S&P because they know that the people that I train use stops, and that makes a big difference when they're evaluating the risk of somebody opening an account. So what I'm trying to say there is you're going to have to plan on a certain amount of money going into this account to be your money that you're going to use for trading the S&P. Just because you're worth $5 million, you don't want to trade in the S&P market a $5 million value, because you might not have that $5 million value when you finish that little process. So what I'm warning you is, you start out with a small amount of money that allows you to evaluate your skill level, and your skill level will tell you how to increase and get a pay. Just like in any other job in America. You remember starting your first job and they paid you this rate that you knew that you were worth more, but you had to go prove to that guy that you were worth more. And as time went on, you started getting paid more. Why did you get paid more? Because you had experience, you had on-the-job training, you became a value. The S&P market works the same way. It will pay you as much as you want to pay, and that's the beauty of it, and will pay you your true value by your performance. And therefore, you can, you know, have these series of steps or raises as you grow as a trader. All right, so we open the account. We get the account set up. We're ready to trade. Well, no. What you got to decide now is what method that you're going to approach the market. Now, I already told you the odds of staying around for 30 days not good, are they? I mean, those are the odds. I can't do anything about it. You know, 10 out of 100 of you are going to make it, 90 of you are going to go to the wayside and be out of equity. So what you got to do is set up a structure that allows you to make it past the first 30 days. The first 30 days are very important. What are you going to learn the first 30 days? Everything that you read may not be the way it is in reality. That's the one thing you're going to learn. The second thing that you're going to learn is you're going to learn how to manage that account and learn how to manage your trades and learn how and what it takes for you to be profitable. And we're going to do that through a process. That process is going to start out deciding whether I should be long, whether I should be short, how much I should risk. Does this risk fit into my total plan of my account? Can I make this trade? A lot of times you're shut out at the box office. It's sold out. Too much risk for the amount of reward. You can't get in that trade because of your plan. And let your plan be your guiding principle. After you finish that first 30 days, then you want to review your plan, take the experience that you now have, apply it to your new plan for your next 30 days. But you're constantly, constantly reevaluating. Because let me tell you, if anybody tells you this is easy, and these guys in here raise their hands and been trading, they know it's not easy. They know it takes hard work. And the hard work is you got to sit there and constantly reevaluate and constantly review and constantly try to improve. It's a day-by-day process. Okay, executing your trade. When you execute your trade, you got to have a structure that tells you when to execute and a structure that tells you when not to execute. I gave you a real good clue of when you wanted to execute and when you didn't want to execute as far as time. The next thing you need is to have support and resistance numbers. And the final thing you need to know is what direction to execute in. Well, when you execute that trade, it's a process of, this is account 21001, buy me one. You have a choice of market order, you can have a limit order, you can have a stop order, or you can just have a stop limit order. And then on the second sentence out of your mouth should be, buy me one at the market, but sell me one on this stop. The process goes this way. You give him your account number, you give him the order, you put the order in, he comes back, gives you a ticket number. That ticket number is very important because that is your record of your trade. And if you lose everything else, you got your ticket number to show evidence of where you made that trade. So when you're off that conversation or off that computer, you have two things on the ticket, a buy and a sell. And you got two ticket numbers. So if you finish after your first trade, you got one ticket number, you've done something wrong, you need to go back. Because I always have that exit point. Okay. You make the trade. Let's say that we decided to go short at 14:27. I like using the process of a trailing stop. A trailing stop means that I want the market to take me out, because if I come down to these support levels and we break those support levels, I just move my stop on down. You know, in design, it's the greatest plan. Sometimes it doesn't work that way, but in design, it is the most effective approach for trading, a trailing stop, because you're letting the market take you out instead of, I think it's going to hit a low here or a high here and take yourself out. And there's a lot of variations once you get to be where you trade more than one contract. You know, one approach is put on two or three contracts, take a couple off, and then let one run like I did this morning. Okay? Improve your trade. And I tell people to do this, and it's very important. You know, you spent all this money, all this time, all this resources to make this trade. But learn something from that trade, whether you win or lose. How do you do that? After you finish that trade, or at the end of that day, you take some notes and say, this is what I was thinking, this is what I saw, this is what I did, this was the result of that. And you start to build a library. And it's your library. It's your library to go back to at the end of the week, the end of the month, the end of the year, and say, hey, am I approved from when I did this trade, or am I still making the same mistakes I did back then? It tells you and points out errors that you can eliminate. Believe me, if you eliminate errors every trade, you will become a trader. That's the secret. The secret is eliminating these mistakes that we all make. And you do that by documenting that and looking at it and reviewing it. You spend all this time, you paid all this money, use that evidence to tell you what you need to do to make the proper changes. And that's improving your trade. Okay. Time zone number one. Let's talk about how I would trade time zone number one. All right, I told you at 8:15, I got the key numbers, I got the 3:30 number, I got the options, I got the news. In today's market, it opened at 13:25, or 14:25. That's below where we were at 3:30 in the morning. Therefore, I've got the market moving lower. So I sat back and I watched the market this first 30 minutes. And this is something that you can do too when you leave here. You take the range of the first 30 minutes and you watch the range after the first 30 minutes for direction. If it's higher than that range, chances are, and I say chances are, when I use the word chances are, the majority of the time if it's higher in that range, that trend will continue throughout the first few hours of the day. And you know that. Because if you observe this every day, that's what happens. So therefore, if I'm watching the market, and in today's case, the range was 13.25 to 13.18, and we get to the second bar, and we're below the midpoint of the first bar, then that tells me we're probably still in a downtrend, probably will continue through, you know, 10, 11, 12 o'clock today. That's what that second bar tells me. All right. Now, I love to talk about the first 15 minutes. And Damon and I was laughing about it earlier, okay? The professionals on the floor, these guys are not walking around without brains. They watch the news. They watch NBC. They watch all the outside influences of the market. They know the same things that you knew at 8:25 when they say, hey, the market's going to be up, right? So they're in auction. If you were running an auction and you knew that the door was packed outside to get in to buy your product, what are you going to do? You're going to do what? You're going to raise your price, right? So what happens in that first 20 minutes is what I call the first screw job of the day. They raise that price so high, and think about the process, that the orders go through the system. Let's give it 15 to 20 minutes, and it's getting faster with the electronics, but 15 to 20 minutes for those orders to process through the system. I'm in the pit. I don't have to know about market direction. I don't have to know about anything. All I got to know is about order flow. And I know that once order flow stops, what's going to happen? The market's going to reverse. So I'm sitting, and I did this when I was in Chicago one day with Damon. I said, Damon, I'm going to stand here, and I'm going to tell you when I wanted to make a move here in the first 20 minutes. And I was sitting there observing. And I was watching the order flow. And this is one of those days, is one of these blast ins and market's way up. And I watched this happen. The phone's ringing off the hook. I look around and all the clerks are busy taking orders by. The orders are being flashed in. This looks like, I don't know, a cluster, you know, that's going on there in the middle. And all of a sudden, about 20 minutes after the market had opened, I looked around, the clerks wasn't getting any phone calls. I said to myself, Damon, sell me two. He sold me two. Sure enough, phone stayed dead for about 10 minutes. Price started retreating. Price got down to the low of the day. All of a sudden, what happened? The phone started ringing again. And this is order flow coming back in. This is all the losers that got in early are getting out. So the guys on the floor, what they've done is, as I call it, Chicago slip. What they've done is they've sat there and marked the price up so high you couldn't make money if it rallied for 3 weeks. By the time you're reported back your fill, you're already beyond the point that you thought you wanted to lose, and you're sitting there, get me out. I'll take my $1,000 loss. And then 20 minutes later, it's back up at the highs again. So what they've done is very carefully constructed a method and a process to relieve you of your money. And it happens every day. Either high opens, low opens, when you have these violent opens. And you'll watch this process. So you've got this 20 minutes of run back. So that's why I tell new traders, don't try to trade during that time. Because what's going to happen, you're going to think you're seeing one thing, and the Chicago slip is going to get the other on you. Then about 10:15, you'll call up there and you'll say, where's everybody at? Oh, they're having coffee or what? Yeah, they're up there laughing about the opening. I'm just being characteristic about that. But the fun part is that I've seen this over the years, and it's by observation of watching this market, and it will save you a fortune knowing it happens. And then I want you to go back from this conference, and I want you to start watching what I'm talking about, and you'll find these truths to be self-evident. They are true, okay? All right, so we get to 9:30. At 9:30, I say that's trade zone number one. The real trend of the market should emerge at 9:30. And what I mean by that is you can take the market at 9:30 and you'll look at your Morgan Stanley, you'll look at your NASDAQ, and now it starts trending. And that's when you want to trade. And I'll get in some details in that last session. Okay? All right. We finish up trade zone number one. What should you do as a new trader? You should record all your observations, everything that you saw, and log it into that trade if you made it, because that's a learning process. The next time it becomes important for you to really observe the market is about 12:30 Central Time. Has anybody ever thought about what I call Feeding America program? Okay, what the Feeding America program is, it starts at 11 o'clock and lasts to 1 o'clock. And think of this wave of lunch boxes across the country as you get to California. That's the Feeding America program. Well, what I tell people is during the Feeding America program, you don't want to trade because during that time period, you've got a lot of this choppiness and noise, and that's not when you want to trade. So that's some good advice for you there. All right, we'll get to 12:30, start focusing again. I said the 12:30 number is one of my most important numbers of the day because I use it as a barometer. There's a tendency for the market to rally. The best trade is when it rallies for the first 20 minutes and then goes below the 12:30 number at 1 o'clock, then I know the odds are in favor. It's going to sell off in the last half, so you make money up and make money down during that time period by following the indicators. But it's a good period of time for you to step back after that little break and look at the market and in its truest sense say, what is the market telling me to do? All right. Another period that you shouldn't trade is at 13:55 to 14:05. The bond market closes at 2 o'clock. It's almost like a news announcement going on in the S&P market at that time. There's a lot of noise, a lot of flutter, a lot of direction, so I tell people try to avoid that period, that 10 minutes. At 2:15, we enter trade zone number 3. Trade zone number 3 is the last trade you should be making during the day. And I tell people, if you get to 12:45 and you're still in that trade, tighten your stop because you don't want to trade the last 30 minutes. Very similar to the opening. What happens in the last 30 minutes of the market? Institutions at that time have had their noon meetings and they've had their votes, and these large orders are hitting the market. These large orders can have drastic effects on the S&P in the last 20 to 30 minutes of trade. We don't want to trade during that time. And the reason we don't want to trade during that time, that is the period we're subject to be whipsawed or hurt. So what have we done with this process of time? We, one, have tried to put time on our side and only trade during the times the market's going to trend. We've tried to avoid the times when the market doesn't trend and has these violent swings and these drastic movements. And that's good for our risk, because if we're able to do that, we're only spending our golden BBs when we need to spend our golden BBs and not having to go into 12 or 1 o'clock with big losses. Okay, and those are tendencies and not trade recommendations. Go on. Okay, the question is, I'm an equities trader, and he says, this is very similar to what I'm seeing. Well, it should be, because the S&P is the premier equity of the world. The S&P is, if you're trading equities and do not understand the S&P, you are selling yourself short, because the S&P is the general, and Microsoft and IBM, they're the lieutenants. Still patrolling the corporal now, but anyway, I'm just saying it comes down the line is what I'm trying to say. You got to know the S&P. If you're going to trade equities, you've got to know the S&P market. I spoke in Ontario, California, and there was about 2,000 day traders there that traded equities. And I got to tell you, I was shocked to find out that only about 50 to 80 of those people that I had talked to there used the S&P. So what does that do for you being here in this session this morning? It puts you light years ahead of the majority of the people you're competing against. I like those odds, because you're learning about something that's very important to your trade. And you're absolutely correct. I have stocks that I trade, but I don't trade those stocks unless I get the go-ahead with the S&P. Very important. All right. Ken, would you straighten the slide up, buddy? All right. Thank you. Okay. I want you to look at these numbers here. This is a very important, what I call, overview of the way I'm going to view the market this week and how I'm going to trade it. Last night at 5:30, the Globex opening was 14,2790. So we don't have a pen to write that in there, do we? A green pen? I always like to do that. 14,2790. Okay, that's my first key number of the week. 14,2790. That's where we opened last night. And I've explained why I think that's important. Because if I go look at the current price, I'm at 14,17, what conclusion am I going to come to? People that bought last night are losing. And what's the other conclusion I'm going to come to? Losers lose more and winners win more, right? So that would bias me towards my trade. All right, the second number that came out was the 3:30 number in the morning, and that was at 14:28. Very close. Too close to call. Let's just say 27.90 and 2800. They're right on 14:28. What does that tell me about the week already? That tells me that 14:28 is a big number to me. I've got two numbers already, and already they're the same number twice. What that means is a repeat. And I'm going to judge the market in reference to these two numbers. All right, then we had the opening this morning. It was 14:25. Okay, so we had 14:28, 14:25. Guys, they're beating me about the head and shoulders, telling me that the market's going down. And you say, how can I look at that and know that? Because I track this week in and week out. It's a process. This gives me a clue. Then I start looking for indicators. What do the indicators say in conjunction with this overview? If they support it, what does my risk say? What is my reward? That's how it leads me to my trade. All right, now at 12:30 today, we'll have another important number. That would be our noon barometer. That noon barometer, I don't know what it's going to be, but at 12:30 today, I will be checking that number. Let's talk about possibilities and how to view the market. Let's say that number is at 14:31.5. What do I know about the market? I know that we're probably in an uptrend. It's going to continue an uptrend and continue throughout the afternoon if it's at 14:31. Exactly. Okay? He just said 68% of the time last 30 days. How does he know that? Because he's tracking the numbers, he's tracking the market, and he knows this stuff works. Okay, so what we're going to do is at 14:31, we're probably going to go long in trade zone number 3. That's how we're going to use it to our advantage. But let's say that number is at 14:14. Huh, 14:14. And now we're trading, the current price is 14:18. I'm probably going to view the rally attempt at 14:25 to 27 as a selling opportunity with a low risk stop if that's the case. Of course, you've got to look at the indicators and you've got to look at the other elements of the trade, but that's how I'm going to view it. Because typically what happens is, after you've had that first initial surge, you have a retracement. Has anybody in here heard about Fibonacci and about the retracement levels? Let's make it simple. You don't have to calculate 382, 618, 1.61. You don't have to do that. All you got to do is generally know that you're going to get a retracement after a downwave. What is that retracement going to be? A third, a half, two-thirds? Who knows? Who cares? We know we're going to get a retracement. So if we're going to get a retracement, we say, well, it should come up about halfway. And you say, okay, 14:19, 14:18. But we got the roadmap pinpointing that retracement for us. Because what is not up there on that first chart is the details of where that S&P and how it traded down to that level and where it's having problems getting through. And you'll see a very, you know, usually you see a very unique pattern if it is a downtrend. You'll see 14:18, 14:18, 14:17, 14:16. Or it can't print higher than 14:25, which would caution you that you're probably going higher, or it can't get above 14:28. So you got all these numbers in the beginning forming this fortress that's saying this rally stalls there. And that's how you look at it, detail by detail, to set up your trade. All right, go to the next one. Okay, last night, while we were organizing these slides, we ended up spilling water on those. But I got these rules memorized, and I said, well, these are here, so I'm going to read them out loud to you, okay? The first rule of trading the S&P, and this is Tom Busby Rule 101, is you do not want to risk more than $750 per contract per day, or you won't make it as a day trader. Now, what I mean by that? That means that my very first trade of the day, I really don't want to lose $750 on that trade before I make it, so I'm going to make it a lot tighter stop for that very first trade of the day. Because later on in the day, I might want to risk 4 or 5 points after I build up my capital for that day. That's what I mean by it. It doesn't mean I just use a 3-point stop automatically. It just means the first trade of the day or my first venture or battle, as I was telling you this morning, that I make, you know, I go out, I want to come back with more than I started with to build up my reservoir of where I'm going to trade. But the bottom line for you is, if you finish your day of trading, you trade one contract, and you blow out yourself from $750, quit trading. There'll be another day. And remember, part of your plan is you don't want to lose your whole wad the first day. You want to last. You want to be around long enough to learn some of these things I'm trying to point out to you. Therefore, never lose more than $750 per contract per day. And that, you know, and I say per contract because you might trade 5 contracts or 10 contracts, but it's per contract. That's a money management rule that I use. Okay. I say always trade when you're relaxed and not tense. Do not go into the market being bothered by something else, because I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. When it comes time for you to make that good decision and you've got these factors creeping in, interfering with your focus, what's going to happen? You're going to make a bad decision. You know, back when we used to fly, we used to say, hey, one real bad decision, we're not around any longer. We had to really carefully think out and be focused. And I think that applies to trading. You want to really be comfortable and relaxed when you trade. if the phone's ringing off the hook, if your wife's mad at you, I would advise you, it costs you a lot less to go buy her candy and flowers than it does for you to get in the S&P market and lose money to prove to her how she costs you money by nagging at you or doing whatever she does or whatever. Just an example. Okay. Trade the numbers and not money. Okay? Trade the numbers and not money. What do I mean by that? I mean, your trading plan that you develop has to be based on money, but when you trade, do the numbers. In other words, I can make this trade, I'm risking a dollar, I'm going to make $2, and don't let the excitement of the moment influence a trade. Let me tell you a common characteristic of new traders. A common characteristic of new traders, they put on a trade like I did this morning, and they instantly take their $500 profit, and they touch first base, and they run tell Ronald over here, hey, I made $500 this morning trade. Hey, I made $500 trade. What they should be telling them is, I'm still in this trade, and I'm up 10 points. I got $2,500 cooking. I got $2,000, with a trailing stop. That's the trade I'm telling you about. That's the trade you want to make. You don't want to be like most new traders, just because you can ring the bell, and get that satisfaction of being right. Sometimes your best trade, and you'll discover this if you do this little review process, and always in our course when we talk about it, we always say, where would you be if you stayed in this trade the whole day? How much money would you actually have made? Would you ever got stopped out? These are the kind of questions you ought to ask yourself about your own decision process of touching first base rather than hitting that home run. And ask yourself this question in baseball. Who makes the most money? The singles hitters or the home run hitters? The home run hitters make the most money in baseball. Why? Because they can have the greatest impact on the game. Think about it. So what you want to do is, when you expose yourself, you want to be in there for the full round of the trade. That's not saying you don't want to use good techniques to protect your profits, but one of the sayings, never let a profit turn into a loss.
Please stop the session.
Well, taking a profit because you took a $200 profit when you should have took a $2,500 profit. You can go broke taking a profit. Sometimes you've got to stay in that trade and let it mature. And the older people will appreciate this statement. Don't we get better with age? Trades work the same way. All right. It says, do not trade between 12:30 and 1 on the short side. This is my rule for me. And I encourage you not to be short between 12:30 and 1. There's too much to learn about the market between 12:30 and 1 to get on the short side, have your ears pierced. Well, you probably should be sitting back and waiting for the 1 o'clock print to determine how your direction for the real trade is. So I encourage you not to trade on the short side between 12:30 and 1. The reason I encourage you not to do that, I did it for years, and I kept getting stopped out, and finally the light bulb went off. So this is crazy. How much money did I have to spend to figure this out? So that's one of my personal rules. I don't go short between 12:30 and 1. Don't trade between 155 and 205. I told you the reason why. You don't want to be short when the bond market's closing because the noise in the market throws the jiggles in there, and the jiggles can mess you up, and you just really want to be on the sideline. Do not trade at scheduled news release times. Okay. I told you can find the economic reports that are going to affect every day's market, either on your data feed. Barron's has it. If you get a copy of Barron's in the very front, they tell you what economic reports. Two other people can influence the market, and they can influence it in a big way. One of them is Andrew Mitchell's husband. The other one is Bill Clinton. Okay? If those two people are talking, then I would encourage you not to be in the market because it's not worth the money you'll have to spend if they do something or say something. And I always go back to Andrew's husband, the night of irrational exuberance on Sunday evening. The market's falling out of bed, and everybody's asking why. And then after it's down limits, somebody said, well, Greenspan happened to say the market was overvalued. So, if you know these guys are talking, avoid them with the plague because they can influence what happens. And I think it's last November, They came out in the middle of the day. The market had this sudden uprush of about 50 points in 5 seconds. If you'd have known that he was going to talk, you could have avoided that. Have goals in your plan. My goal for you, if you're new, or my goal for you, if I've convinced you to try this structure and method, my goal for you is you not to lose equity in 30 days. That's my goal for you. Because if I know that if I can get you past 30 days without you having a depreciation of your assets, then I know that you're going to be around for the 60, 90, and 120 days, and now you're becoming a trader. You're showing consistency, you're showing time, you're showing passion, and you're showing the ability to have the discipline to be around. Had an Australian that came to my school. The Australian was a NASDAQ level 2 trader. He had a lot of thoughts on the market, but the bottom line was this Australian was a gambler. I could tell him the rules about the $750. I could tell him the rules about not trading before the first hour. I could tell him all this, but the problem was, as he later came to the conclusion, was he was a gambler. I suggested that he make trips out to Las Vegas. If he was going to gamble, it would be a lot less costly than dealing with the market. The market doesn't handle gambling well. I'll just tell you that. Okay. Follow your mind and not someone else's. You know, I can tell you about a trade I make or a trade that I do, and I can show you how I do it and take you through the process. But let me tell you, if you're not understanding that trade and you're not into that trade yourself mentally, what you're going to do is you're going to get out when you shouldn't get out, you're going to stay in when you shouldn't stay in, and you should set up your own trade using everything that you've gathered to help you make that decision, but you be convinced. It's like, you know, I said in the first place, it's like flying an airplane. You know, you go off the ground, you're soloing for the first time, and you look over there, the instructor's no longer there to get you down. Trading is very similar. You get in that trade, you got to get yourself out. So you have your exit strategy in place, and you have your plan, and follow that plan. Another thing about being a trader is always wanting to blame somebody. Okay? Oh, I got a bad quote. Oh, I got a bad feel. Oh, I did this. I've heard these things for years and years and years. Be responsible. Hey, what happened to you doesn't decide whether you make money or lose money over the long run. All it does is just irritate you a little bit. It's part of the game. You have to take responsibility for your own actions. Okay? All right. Now, for those of you that attend this session for the next 10 days, if you want it, you will receive what I call my educational update. It goes out at 10 o'clock Central Time every morning. And I want to take you through that to give you some feel for what you're going to receive and the reason I do it. If you sign up for the course that we have in Mobile, and we got information on that, but if you sign up for that course, we'll give you a manual, we'll give you all the stuff that talks about this method and the intricacies of that method, but what we try to do before you get down there is give you these educational updates where you can sit there and make notes of what you saw, how it happened, and your interpretation. That way, when you come to the class, we got something for me to figure out what area we need to focus on, because that's very important. And that makes the class a lot better. After the 2 days in Mobile, I tell the students, hey guys, I can't teach you everything in this 30 days or 2 days down here. What we are going to do is really start the class now, because now we're talking about trading, we got a plan in place, and we're going to go to the next step. And that's when the school really starts. Now, the first section of the educational update is review. And in this case, yesterday was a down day with 14.50 holding the decline. Noon balloon did not rise. All rallies were short in nature. And this was in July 20th of this year. You remember what happened after the market kept, you know, after this day, it just kept declining, declining, declining. We followed it down checkpoint by checkpoint. But this was a market message. Now, this is the way the market looked on that day. And if you'll look there, from 12:30 to 1 on this day, I had a print at 12:92.70 and a print at 1 o'clock at 12:90. Now, I told you that was a negative noon balloon. What does a negative noon balloon tell me? that are to position on the short side if I get the proper setup for trade zone number 3. You'll look, the low of that day was about 1385, and in fact, it did go down. Well, I had advanced knowledge of knowing what to expect because I'd done my homework. I knew what the percentages were for certain events to occur during the latter half of the day. This is not rocket science. This is taking the information that's there in front of us, applying it, studying it, and being prepared. And we came on down. That was a good day. Okay? Is that the next one? Okay, the next day at 10 o'clock, I reviewed. Yesterday, the market gave numerous opportunities by following the roadmap. What I'm telling people is, and I talked to people during this day that were telling me, hey, I think it's going up. I said, don't think, do what the market's telling you to do. Opportunity after opportunity. And visualize this. It's a train running. Stops at station A at 9:30. Stops at station A at 10:30. Stops at station A at 1 o'clock. It's giving you an opportunity to come aboard or stay on the sidelines. And if you do come aboard, make sure you come aboard with the direction of the day, and the direction of that day was down. We'll target trade zone number 2 for today's trade, and we execute via the roadmap. What I mean by that is I'm going to take that print on the roadmap, use that as a risk point, and make my trade once I determine that the trend is down. And I give key numbers. Key numbers on this day, 1395, 698, 1402. See that 1402 number there? Remember earlier today, I said to you 1402 was a big number? Well, 1402 was a big number back then. Why? Because it appeared as a pivot number. It appeared as a 330 number. It appeared as an opening price. This last week, it's appeared as all three. So that's why 1402 is a big number. Oh, go back there. Okay. At this particular time, around July 21st, I had a lot of people that's in the market long-term. They know I'm in the market long-term with some of my serious money. And I was telling them I'm raising a little cash. Because I felt very, at that time, looking at the S&P on a daily basis, I felt very strongly that the market was going to correct. And I was pretty much raising cash in long-term holdings. So that's how you can use the day-to-day movement of the S&P to help you long-term. It was giving me signs of saying, remember I said negative noon balloon 2 days in a row? These are the signs saying that, hey, maybe everything ain't rosy in Denmark. Makes me cautious. All right, now we're going to jump forward and fast forward to September. Okay, this is a very important update, okay? Last week started at highs and reversed on Thursday, but still ended negative for the week. That trend that had started in July was starting to accelerate. And if you look at the price, and using the overview price, you would have saw how the prints were getting consecutively lower throughout that week and how the market was pointing lower. And this is... Well, here, that's the next day? Okay. September, go back to the update at 10. Okay. Money's market did in fact go lower. Watch trade zone number 2 for trend reversal because the indicators had started firming, and if the market stays below 1345, the market should seek lower levels, 1316. That was my checkpoint in the bigger picture that said the market had a potential of going down to 1316. Okay? And I knew that because I'd been following the market day by day, keeping track of my key numbers, and knew that we were at a significant point in the market. The roadmap that day, as you see, you didn't have much of a rise during noon. As a matter of fact, it was neutral. But at 2:30, the low print was 1315.50. I get a lot of calls. Tom, how do you know this stuff? I said, it's very simple. I do what I tell you I do. I keep track of these numbers as the market progresses, checkpoint by checkpoint, constantly bracketing the current price. And the advantage I have now, and the advantage you have now, I have software that does that for me. I used to have to do this by hand. The age of computers is great now that I finally figured out how to use them. Okay? That was a real stumbling block. Okay? All right, so we finished up that Tuesday and Wednesday. What do you got? Do you have Wednesday's update? If you don't, I'll just tell you. You got it? And I always like doing this, you know. I encourage our students, if they miss yesterday, that tells me that they didn't get it, and we need to talk again and go over some of the finer points of this. And I always encourage them to call and set up appointments where we can talk about that. Because if you show me you've got passion for wanting to do this, my commitment is I'll be there to help you. Because the reason I teach is because I spent so many years beating my head against the wall trying to figure out something that worked. You know, chasing stochastics, chasing Elliott wave, chasing moving averages, chasing relative strength, chasing chart patterns. And I finally came up with something that I found that was really good that would help me, who I think doesn't have the right personality to be a good trader, you know, because I get so high and get so low. It keeps me centered and keeps me on the eye on the ball. And that's why I tell the students, says, guys, if you're serious about this, we're going to work it step by step until you get it. And that's our commitment. But anyway, 1325 at the time would have showed we had a market recovery. I don't think that happened. I think patience. I was trying to tell people to be cautious. We broke 1316 and went on lower. Eventually bottomed out on this move about 1241.50 on a Sunday night before the uptrend started. Okay? Yeah, let's go with the charts next. Yeah, and then we'll go into questions and answers. Put the 30 minute up there if you will. Okay. Okay, I told you very early on that the difference in Tom Bosby today and Tom Bosby 20 years ago, I spent about 2% of the time trading now and 98% of the time on the sidelines. And I found that a 30 minute bar chart tells me everything that I need to know as far as the answers to the questions I'm seeking. But I want to show you something that's really sort of a clue for you. And I advise you to look at the opening price as opposed to the other prices as a judgment point. But if you'll look down here in the bottom right-hand corner, you'll see that very low there at 1219. I don't have a pointer, but I'll try to point it out to you. Right. No. That's hard for me to do. Right there. See it? See that opening and that close there, where it opened at the low end on that low and closed at the high end? This is a pattern that you'll see at lows where it opens down at the bottom and closes up there. Then you get a reversal, and you can follow that up. And then I noticed, and I got a moving average on here, and you notice how it broke the moving average and you had the instant follow through, and it seemed to be the top. That's really why I don't like using moving averages for day trading, because everybody sees those moving averages, jumps in, the guys on the floor mark it up, and you get in at absolute high, and it breaks the moving average, and you shouldn't have never took it to start with, and you end up losing money. That's one reason I like the opening and going to the close of that particular bar to figure out whether the trend is up or down. So if you didn't get this, ask this in the question, I'll go back over it. But basically, follow your opening, look where your current price is or your closing price, and look at that relationship to let you know whether that previous bar was bullish or bearish. And stair-step your way up and down the market using that. You'll find yourself the majority of the time on the right side of the market to the wrong side, and that's what you got to do to be successful when you trade. Okay? And then you can break that down to a five-minute chart. And a five-minute chart will give you a smaller look at that 30-minute chart to help you have early identification of that trend ending if you're in a trade or not in that trade. And I'll tell people, if you're going to look at charts, you want to start out with the big chart first, and then whether that's a monthly chart, weekly chart, daily chart, hourly chart, 30-minute chart, 15-minute chart, 5-minute chart, 1-minute chart, and tick chart. Never go in reverse order. Tick chart, 5-minute chart, 15 chart. Start out with the big picture and take it down to how low you need it to go. But always use a larger chart to guide your trades. Use other charts to the fine point does. Okay, I think we need to open up for questions now. Guys, first of all, let me just say, I enjoyed talking to you this morning. I hope you got some benefit out of it. It's like I said, it's awful hard to try to get into the small, minute details of every trade, but I hope I've given you some insight. By the way, when we do the test email, if you'll ask for it, I've got 20 insights that I produced last week that I'll be glad to send you. In addition, if you hadn't had a chance to get a copy of what I call my penalty tape, I'd encourage you to come by and get a copy of that. And all it is a talk I gave about 2 years ago. And I use that as my own penalty to have to listen to myself following my own rules and doing what I'm supposed to be doing when I have a losing day. And you'll hear me talk about that later. Any questions? No. And the question is, in the periods of time that you don't want to trade, those initiation points. So if I'm already in a trade, I'm going to take those into consideration and try to have a stop working a lot tighter once I enter those zones. Okay? Yeah, the question is, if someone wants to get started in the futures market and trading the S&P, what would be my recommendation, whether I'd use the big S&P or the small S&P, which is the E-mini? My recommendation, and that's after teaching a lot of people, is to use the small S&P, because the small S&P will let you practice your procedures and practice everything that you need to practice, and you'll know when it's time to go to the big S&P. So my answer is, use the small S&P. It's a very good market. It's electronic, and your slippage is really nil and void in that market, and that makes it nice. And you can actually see your results and see what you're talking about. Now the E-mini, like I said, had a little bit more elasticity, so you got to account for that in your stock placement. No. The question is, what are my key numbers? My key numbers, first of all, in the broad sense, are support and resistance. How do I get my key numbers, I think, is the question you want to ask. I take my key numbers from previous markets. I do that from previous opens, previous closes, or not closes, previous 330 numbers, and frequency of seeing them. If I see a number over and over again, like this 1428 that's starting to appear, then that number becomes real important to me. If I see it three or four or five times, then I know that I've seen a market that's going to respect that number. And through observation, if I observe in a market and it can't get below a certain number, then I'll make a mental note of this might be a key number and include that in my key numbers. Hope that answered your question. And in getting key numbers, the process I do, I start with the weekly overview, I go to the roadmap, I go to those periods, and I start recording. I hope that answers your question. Okay? Data feed? Okay, I use eSignal, and I also use DTN. Both of them, I believe, are good data feed sources. I use a software program for charting. It's known as Ensign software. I don't know if you're familiar with it. Word of mouth is how they advertise. A lot of the professional traders use that particular program. It's a good program. It's easy to use. Ensign Software, E-N-S-I-G-N. I think it's EnsignSoftware.com. You can go to the web. Yeah. Yes, okay. Yeah, what we're doing is I did a workshop. I went out to Ontario and did a workshop. Everybody said, Tom, you're only able to talk for an hour and a half. There's so many questions we want to do. Would you come back out here? I spoke to a crowd of about 170. I said, if there's enough interest for me coming out here, we'll come out here and do a one-day workshop. What happened is I went to Ontario, California. We did a one-day workshop. I liked that format because in that format, I was able for people that had traded before or people that hadn't traded before review and go over these concepts in greater detail. In addition, in the workshop format, I bring other speakers in to talk about certain elements, like for one, computers and how to use the internet in your trading. And then I bring in usually somebody from the pit side to tell you about the pit and how it operates, and then the overall concept. But the real general reason I do the workshops is I talk to a lot of people at once that are serious about getting in and coming to the school, and we can get a lot of the preemptive stuff out of the way. It's still, it all boils down to what fits the individual. If you're close to where I have one of the workshops, the only one I know that I'm going to do now is in February in New York. That's the only one that's planned. Okay, the question is, on the roadmap software, how do I evaluate each and every one of those indicators in a context that allowed me to decide whether I want to be long or short? And in the interest of time, I'm going to have to give you a simple answer, but if you come to the school, I'll show you in detail how to do this. But the bottom line is what I do is I look for those indicators to support that basic thesis that I found out from the previous open. So therefore, if those indicators are horses, as one of the students said, are all running in the same direction, and they're all red or all green, then that's a clue to me that my decision that the market was going down or going up is matching that, and that will take me to the next step of the trade. So the simple answer is, if they're all green or all red, that puts me into the ballpark of making that trade. The actual open is the first point I look at. No, of the previous 30-minute bar. Exactly. The question was, what do I look at specifically? If you took me in there right now and got me in front of a chart or in front of a quote machine, the first thing I would do is look at the 30-minute bar and see where we opened and where we're currently trading. Once I looked at that, then I would look at the indicators and see where they were 30 minutes ago and where they are right now. And if they were all in agreement, then I could effectively lay a trade on that would allow me to have minimum risk. I might lay that trade on. I hope that answered your question. Interesting.
Would it serve that main purpose of the chart and showing the direction?
In other words, are you talking about candlestick charts? Right. Yeah. Some people are visually, it's easier conceptually for them to see it visually with charts, and other people are like me, like numbers. I use both, but I really rely on the numbers because the numbers are specific, and I have a good memory for where those support and resistance numbers are. Some people can look at a chart and get the same numbers. Give you a little example. Have y'all met Cameo that was at our booth? Okay, Cameo has been trading for less than a year. We're out in California. We're doing a workshop. Damon has been trading for 23 years. I said, Damon. And Damon is a chart reader. I said, I want you to, as an experiment, to write on the back of a piece of paper what is the most significant support level this S&P has this morning. Damon turned over the piece of paper, wrote it down. I said, Cameo, I want you to write down, for me, your most significant support level in the market. She handed me a number, he handed me a number, and they were exactly the same. I said, this is a great discovery for me, because I've taken someone with 23 years of experience and taken someone with a year's experience, and they're operating off real good numbers. And that to me, was a real, it was an eye-opener that, you can translate this, you can teach it. And here she, Damon knows a lot more and probably likes to forget a lot of what he knows, but the bottom line is, he knows this to be true. Because he was shocked and I was shocked to have the same answer. So that's how you can take this method and apply it, and it'll work out to the same answer depending on what you use with support and resistance off charts. During the day? During the day, as soon as the market opens. Yeah, the mini trade's 24 hours too. Yeah, it's not, I traded last night, I put on two E-minis, And I didn't have any problem getting the order on. I mean, and as a matter of fact, I got in a quarter point higher than I did on the big S&P. So I guess last night at the time I put it on, it was good. I think it's not noticeable. It's not noticeable for what you want to do. No, the elasticity of the E-mini, is a little bit wider than the elasticity of the big S&P. For example, if the high on the S&P is 1420, you might look down there and see the E-mini high is 1430 or 1429. And I just cautioned you, if you did trade the E-mini, always check the E-mini high and low if you thought a stop was closed. And that was what I was trying to say. Yeah, and that's a function of being electronic versus the old-fashioned way, and a function of the pip traders making a market in the S&P. Well, I think that you're going to see it, and I think as time goes on, we've got a major trend. Did anybody see the Fortune article talking about Trader Nation? Okay, I think it points out a trend in America that's going on, and after visiting California and talking to people I do on the phone, this is a major trend. This force is bigger and is huge. It's where people that are no longer going to work for AT&T and staying until it's time for retirement. What is happening is they're going to work for AT&T and deciding they want to take their destiny in their own hands. They're going buying a computer. They're getting on the Internet, and they're discovering what their niche is. This is a trend that's continuing, and it's at the incubation stage of it, and it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. The information is available to you now as a practicing trader. 15 years ago, I had no way of getting this kind of information that comes across this Internet. So therefore, what I'm trying to say, we're at the early edge of that trend, and we're going to see bigger and bigger gains in that area. And you can envision, I heard somebody tell me this morning, conferences like this in the future will be held from our computers in our home, and having speakers come on and interaction like we're having now. And I can see that happening. And I never thought of that. But I think that's where we're going. I love trading the Dow futures. And I'll tell you a little characteristic about trading the Dow futures. You don't want to trade the Dow futures the first half of the day. You want to trade the Dow futures the last half of the day. The reason...
For free information on stocks, options, futures, indexes, get to know iKnow.com.